Hi, and welcome to the Design Systems Podcast. This podcast is about the place where design and development overlap. We talk with experts to get their point of view about trends in design, code, and how it relates to the world around us. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Knapsack. Check us out at knapsack.cloud. If you want to get in touch with the show, ask some questions, or generally tell us what you think, go ahead and tweet us at @thedspod. We'd love to hear from you. Hey everyone, welcome to the Design Systems Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Strahl. Today I'm here with Brian Dorsey, the Director of Platform Product Management at MasterCard. Brian, you have a great story about how you got into this position. So why don't you go ahead and do sort of your own intro, brief history of career life?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been a product manager at MasterCard for about 5 years now. The first, say, 3 years of that were pretty much fully focused on building out a design system. And after that, I moved into a more expanded role now as a director of platform product management. And with that increased scope, it expands beyond just design systems and it goes to kind of front end, back end, and data, libraries and services, developer tooling, all of those sorts of things. And then also includes the infrastructure side. So it's really basically a full developer platform that spans, you know, all areas of software development with a lot of the same goals that we talk about for design systems.
Gotcha. So you all call this technology foundations, right?
Right.
Yeah. So within that, what's sort of the mission of technology foundations? Like, what's the core problem you all are solving?
Yeah, you can basically think about it two different ways. You can either think about it as just providing a great developer experience across the board or as decreasing time to market. So one way we'll try to think about it is, anytime we're building a product, we want to make it the case that they can focus only on the things that are specific to that product, and all other common concerns are taken care of out of the box.
So a lot of this is about, you said, deep engineering, deep tech stuff, right? So how does a DevOps workflow work? How does architecture work? How does some big infrastructure piece of this work? Why do you think that design systems fits in this? Because I think this is somewhat of an outside-the-box area for most organizations when they think about a design system. Usually, a design system lives in the design organization. I have talked at length about my qualms with that on this podcast, but it also often lives inside of a technology organization as a product, not necessarily as infrastructure.
Well, a design system is design system infrastructure, and that's the way we think about it. At the same time, we do think about all of our infrastructure as a product in that we think about the teams using it as our customers, and we try to hold it to a really high standard so that they are choosing to use it because it's this great product that they want to use. But I think a lot of the engineering principles that exist in that sort of group are really helpful for design systems. And I think design systems are actually a much more technical problem than most people think of them as. So a team in a sort of platform organization is one that's going to take the time to make sure things are really high quality and really scalable versus a product team that might need to move a little faster, right? But we're the team that can actually take the time to get things right once so that it can scale across the organization. And I think also just building great tooling, both for the team that owns the design system, as well as for all of the consumers of the design system, can go a really long way in driving adoption and the overall impact that the system can have.
Yeah, I love that idea of the meticulousness required to really deliver value in a design system, because I think this is often overlooked, is when we measure the success of a design system by a lot of the traditional product-oriented metrics, which are largely baked around velocity still, you end up in a situation where the craftsmanship of those components doesn't become the core piece of value that is being delivered from the design system. It comes from like number of components or component coverage or something like that. And it's not to say that those are unimportant, but that's not necessarily the metric that talks about like that repeatable unit of value that the design system delivers, which is that flexible, well-crafted, you know, people talk about bulletproof components. I like to think about it as like anti-fragile components that are present.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that you also have some ownership of DevOps, because a lot of the principles that we think about at Knapsack and a lot of like genuinely the stuff from design systems that I think about as an analog is what was happening, you know, circa 2010 in the DevOps space, where, you know, the world was rapidly moving to cloud architectures for a lot of different applications. People used to have buildings of servers, or every consultancy on the planet had like a little corner rack in their office that was like, this is where all our stuff goes. And people realized that there was a tremendous amount of inefficiency in the duplication of all this infrastructure everywhere. And so we needed to have systems that would actually put this in place, largely in the cloud, but even in a shared ecosystem that would help us manage where our code goes. And I see so many parallels to this in the design system space. And I'm curious if you do too, largely because what we were taking is something that was broadly disaggregated. A bunch of different infrastructure and a bunch of different code lived in all these different places. And we said that there is a ton of value in the centralization of this, in flexible infrastructure that can work in a variety of different use cases.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels. If you imagine a company that had a bunch of different products and they all have a different sense of identity and authorization for users, that would be crazy, right? You would say, why do I have different username and password for all these things? It should just be consolidated into one identity I have with this company.
Well, and it used to be that way, right? Like there was a different username and password for every app, even if it was the same company that ran the app.
Yeah, and so Auth is one of the examples of things that we own. And we think about the front-end infrastructure very similar to the way we think about those other things.
So in sort of drawing out those parallels, you know, if we were to take the maturity model of what was happening inside of design systems and apply it to our historical maturity model of DevOps, you remember that time when it first came out on the scene where you couldn't hire a DevOps engineer. If you put DevOps in your title, you know, you suddenly commanded 30% higher salary than everybody else on the freaking planet that was also an engineer. You know, I feel like in some ways, design systems is just on the cusp of this, and we're all talking about design system designers and design system engineers and design technologist titles and all these other different things like that, where there are people that are wanting these systems and starting to figure out how to adopt these systems. But I don't think we're quite at the maturity level where there's like a bulletproof way of doing this, or, you know, the orchestration that is really well understood for these systems. I feel like at MasterCard, you all are a bit ahead of the game. What's different there that has made this priority or sense of urgency about considering this as a platform so important?
I think there's a couple of things that have led to it. One is, I think having embedded designers, just getting designers and developers to talk to each other, and that we have designer staff to our infrastructure team. That's probably pretty uncommon too. But as I said, we try to think about our developer platform as a product, which means needs to have a great developer experience in this case. So I think that sort of commitment to cross-functional teams that are embedded results in just people of different roles talking to each other. And then I think the other thing that's a little different is we didn't look at design systems as a sort of new initiative we wanted to fund. We had an existing team that started hearing about design systems and saw it as the thing that was going to allow them to make the most progress against their mission, right? We had a front-end infrastructure team that predated design systems at MasterCard. That was the team that I was on. And as we wrapped up a big project, we said, okay, what are we going to do next? And at that point in time, there were a few product teams that had a grassroots design system effort picking up, right? It was just the designers that got together and said, we're all building brand new products and we want to make a positive step change in terms of just the modernness and the design quality of these products. Let's get together and sort of, you know, hack together a design system as we go. And they built out a good start of it and sort of proved the potential value of it. But there was no centralized ownership of it, no investment put into all of the developer experience and the things I'm talking about. And as I was the PM on that team, started hearing about that and was deciding what we're going to do next, I said, this is the thing that's going to help our team drive great design and front-end development across all of the products built on our platform. So I think part of it is thinking less about funding projects and those sorts of things, and instead funding teams with missions and then giving them some amount of autonomy over what they decide to go after.
So you think about this as like you showed promise with this prior system and you found out a way for it to really support the mission of the team. And that made it a focus of something bigger inside of the organization. I'm still not completely clear on how this ended up going from something that was like a design oriented initiative into something that ultimately ended up involving a lot of the engineering side of things. And when I think about that, how did you get engineering more deeply involved in alignment to this mission?
It's a good question. I think it was just that we had the right type of people. And that's kind of one of the points I want to make here is with the whole platform and infrastructure engineering. I think design systems fit so well within the way people who do that sort of engineering think about the way things should be done. And so, like, I think if you took an infrastructure team and a kind of a platform engineering team and said, hey, guess what? You all need to figure out front end now. They would eventually reach a conclusion that looks pretty similar to what design systems are today, even if they weren't exposed to it before. So I think just understanding what design systems were and what promise they have and laying it out, it just made sense to people who think like that.
I love that idea that if you were just like, hey, you in the corner with the like deep back-end experience that just messes with like services all day long, go figure this out for JavaScript. You think that this is what they would come up with?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, our front-end infrastructure team was a spinoff of a team called Architecture. And that's how that team got formed. And then a couple of years later, they found design systems and said, this is the thing we're going to work on.
So in this model where you have like a technology foundations team that is so focused on infrastructure and so focused on a service model, how do you actually stay close enough to product to make it valuable to them?
I think that's where the role of the product manager comes in, right? Not all design system teams have a product manager on them. But I see that as a big part of my role, not just for design systems, but for the whole platform, to go around and talk to all the different product teams, what they're working on, what they want to be working on in the future. And with that, you basically have to say, you know, what are the pain points today as we're developing products? And looking forward at the things that the teams want to do, what are the technologies that are going to have to exist in order to allow them to do those things? So a big part of my role is just understanding what's happening across the board with all the products that we support.
It's interesting how you frame that too, because you're not just sitting there talking about like, how do I solve this product problem, but how do I build an enabling technology that may not exist in this product team yet that ultimately helps them? And I think that's very distinct from this idea about like, all right, product, what do you need? I think that that is maybe the wrong question. I like that you take a more problem-oriented approach about like, what's holding you back? Because then you can start to help do solutions.
Yeah, and I think that gets into the ideas we talked a little bit about for driving adoption, how it's not just focusing all on the system itself and the benefits it can provide in a very generic way, but instead figuring out what your consumers or potential consumers' priorities are and saying, this is the thing that's going to help you achieve that faster.
Yeah, I love that alignment to some other application, right? There's this idea that I think is really fascinating that in a systems-based approach or systems thinking, the idea of just building a system typically isn't good enough. The if you build it, they will come model often doesn't work for systems-based approaches. But if you're telling someone that they can take something that's already a priority for them and drive either better speed or better efficiency or lower cost, sometimes better quality inside of that initiative, now suddenly they really care about that system. And they can also get other people to care about that system. And so that priority alignment is something that's really interesting to me, especially in a company like MasterCard, where basically to drive adoption of a system, you're looking at how do I align to a product priority that already exists inside of a team. It's not like, hey, come over here and check out this cool thing we're doing. I mean, that may be a part of the process, but it's like, here's this problem you have, and here's how I can help you solve that.
Right. And that may just be the pure efficiency and front-end quality play. Right. That was one of the big moments for us was we had a team that owned kind of the core workflow of one of the flagship products. And they were doing an overhaul of that section with the goal of modernizing it and decreasing the average amount of time it took a user to get through this kind of settings chunk of the flow that wasn't the interesting part. And so we heard about that and we said, hey, we think this is the right time for you to start using the design system. And they were a little scared. A lot of them didn't have a ton of React experience. The system wasn't totally proven yet, but we felt like it was ready. And so we convinced them to use the design system, and they finished that project ahead of time, which is never a thing, right? But they finished the build of that faster than they had planned on, And it achieved the thing that they were looking for, right? It decreased the median time to complete that workflow for users by about 50%. And so as a result of that, their own product area created their own mandate to start using the design system. We've never set a mandate, but whenever we have an experience or whenever we provide such a good experience for another team that their own business leadership say, okay, now that I've seen this, this is the way we're doing it. That's so much more powerful for it to come from their own leadership instead of from the builders of the system.
I love that. I think before the show, you were talking about how you have these occasional I told you so moments. And in those I told you so moments, you see that realization in your product team of the value of the system that you created. Can you explain what those look like to you? What are these things where you really realize that like, oh, we've got them. Like they're on our side now.
Right. I mean, I think that was one of them. But I think the ones that are a lot more interesting are when you have one of them that's not centered purely around efficiency. When you solve some problem for them that they didn't know the design system could solve. So more and more, there are customers that, as they buy software products, are demanding the products meet a certain accessibility standard, for example. Right. And there's a product team that had some big opportunities in front of them with that case where they needed to meet accessibility standards. And they hadn't thought a lot about accessibility, which is not that crazy, but they had been using the design system. And so when they started to dig into what is this going to take? Is it feasible for us to do the work required to win this deal? They found out this was going to be pretty easy, right? It wasn't perfect, but there were some small things here and there. And we worked together with them to solve the few things. They fixed them, we fixed them, and they closed the deal. And so that team then was like, oh, the design system is not purely a thing that makes us go a little faster. It's this strategic lever that helps us build software that's high quality and modern and can achieve these sorts of things that come for free as we're just building. I think other examples of that could be, you know, if some product is wanting to move into a new geography and there's localization needs that they had never thought about. You've had episodes on the localization and people who are a lot smarter about that than I am, but that's one of the examples where someone might have never thought about right to left or different density themes, those sorts of things, and they think it's going to be impossible or a big rebuild or something like that. And if you can just show up and say, oh, actually, we got you. It's all good. You know, this is not going to be that hard. Rebrands could be another example. And those are the sorts of things that, again, as a product manager, I try to go out and get ahead of and hear what things people are trying to do. And anytime that we'll be able to help them solve that problem, either with what we already have or by taking on a little bit of work ourselves, I try to make it happen and get it in front of them and make it really clear that without the design system, it would have been a big challenge for them.
There's two things that stick out to me about that. First, that's one of the better descriptions of enabling technology I've heard with some concrete examples, right? This idea that, like, yes, faster, yes, more consistent, but like, what does better really mean? And what better really means in a lot of cases is not that like the software is more performant, it could be, but better really means the ability to adopt things like accessibility standards or localization and right to left or PWAs more effectively because you're using the component library. And so it's not just a shortcut in terms of releasing my new feature, it's a shortcut in an entire capability that I need to onboard that I hadn't considered or thought of when I was building originally.
Yeah, exactly.
So when we think about going beyond just X percent faster, when you think about that idea of like, we enabled an organization to do something that they wouldn't be able to otherwise do, how is that represented as value inside of MasterCard? Because I think that's a little different than how you hear of most design systems representing value, most design systems. And, you know, look, we have this on our website, right? Like, hey, go calculate your ROI based on the time savings of your individuals. How are you representing that to ultimately the people that fund the infrastructure?
With those sorts of calculations about X percent faster and those sorts of things, one of the things I think about is that math is never going to be perfectly accurate. What units are you actually using? Velocity is a unit I'm skeptical of, right? And so there's not a great one. And so we lean a lot more on perception-based metrics, things like Net Promoter Score. I think that's actually a pretty elegant way to measure the success of a design system, to just say, hey, if there was another product being built, do you think they should use this? And if people are saying, yeah, definitely, that's a really strong argument. I guess it doesn't get to any sort of ROI calculation, but I just rely a lot more on the strategic advantage that the design system provides, right? The accessibility, the performance, the themeability, all those sorts of things, right? And I think when you do sometimes find specific things that you can put a dollar value on, for example, if you've got a product that is already built and maybe it's looking to build out a white labeling capability to open a whole new go-to-market strategy for that product, that product team themselves should already be thinking about what's the value of doing that, right? That's the core competency of that product team, should be understanding the value of doing that. So when we come in and say, that's the dollar value of it, and with our system, we can just sort of take care of it for very little cost, versus without it, it would have been effectively a rebuild. And it's another one where the to the dollar precision is probably not going to happen, but it's probably not important. And I think with good storytelling, you can really just say, look at all these things that we can make seamless that would otherwise be next to impossible. And we've got a long list, and we're going to continue to invest in future opportunities like this, right? The buzzword now is going to be generative AI. And I have a lot more to learn about it, but I think the consensus is that design systems are going to be a core enabler of actually getting large companies to be able to use generative AI for at least the front ends of products. So that's something I'm trying to get out ahead of and learn more about right now, right? Is saying, yeah, generative AI is cool, but it's just putting out like vanilla React, right? And we don't want that as an enterprise. We want code that follows our design system and that follows our engineering principles and all these sorts of things. And I definitely think, you know, in the relatively near future, that's going to be a solved problem of integrating your design system with generative AI tools.
If only there was a design system platform company that was working on this problem right now. No, I love to hear it though. Like when we think about that tech enablement side of things, you know, there's a network effect here that's very difficult to measure, but very apparent when you show it to somebody. It's not just about your small team that is going and building something that's moving other teams 10% faster. It's about your small team making it so that those other teams can be more ambitious and do things that they never would have otherwise thought possible. And that's a huge effect to the value of the software that the company is creating. I like the Net Promoter Score metric, the way you described it. I'm also a huge fan of the, like, what if this tool went away? What would be the things that you would have to remove from your roadmap? Or what would be the things that you wouldn't be able to accomplish? And that gives people a really interesting look at, with the system gone, what would they have to compromise on? And I think that that's another interesting look, that when people have become believers in systems thinking and believers in the value of these for front end, you start to see a lot of interesting conversations happen there.
Right. We used to ask people, how is using the system compared to not using the system when it was new? But now we're having fewer and fewer people that have developed front ends without the system, because of the level of adoption we've had and the level of maturity. So it's kind of hard to ask that question now because people don't have something to compare it against, at least not within the context of building products at MasterCard.
So Brian, talking about tools and new ways of working, I was also curious, what sort of tooling do you talk about that supports your design system, that supports all the work you're trying to do?
Yeah, this is another one of the reasons I think that a platform team is a great place for the design system to live, because building great dev tools is one of the things that that team focuses on. So one of the tools we have that I think is really great is this tool we have, which is not specific to our design system. It's a general use tool where we can see every app that consumes our components, because this tool provides a full map of app package dependencies. So we just have a database we can go into and pull every app that's using every component, which version they're using, and so on. So, and then from there, we can also trigger emails that says, hey, everyone who uses this package, there's a new version of it available, and we think you should update, right? And the tool has the ability to say how crucial or how urgent an update is and all the sorts of things. So that's one example of the great tooling. I think we have really great tooling around package management. We version at a component level rather than a system level, which is really hard if you don't have good tooling.
By the way, I think that's crazy. Like we've had several customers that have tried to go down that road that have ultimately ended up backing off because of how difficult and complex the management of dependencies is when you think about it that way.
Yeah, and that's only possible because of the tooling we have, right? Scripts that understand what is all the cascading effect of this update? Do other things need to update also? And that's both for the maintainers and the consumers of the system. I think if you're wanting an open contribution model and getting other teams to add components, having great tooling that makes that as easy as possible, because that's probably not their core workflow of writing and pushing code. It's probably really different from the rest of their work. And so if we just have a script that manages that, and again, all of the cascading impacts of that version or new component, is something that makes that a lot easier. And so the reason that component level versioning has been so great for us is that we started so hacky and grassroots. We didn't have to build out an entire system before releasing it. We just got these teams together and said, let's all start building components. And it allows us to release a system and start providing value before we had a full set of components and before every single component was perfect. And that also let us learn things that we were doing wrong along the way before we built a huge library and released it. We could figure something out really early on because we had released 7 components and one of them had an idiosyncrasy in the API that people didn't like, right? And so instead of making that mistake across 20 components and then having to finish all 20 before we release a version update of the system, we could fix it on one component, release a new version of that one component, and then keep moving and just really reduce the impact of any mistakes like that.
No, that's really interesting. And by the way, if you're not familiar with per component versioning of a design system, what we're talking about is the ability to say, I have version 1.1.1 of a button and version 2.2.2 of a card. Does version 1.1.1 of a button work with that version of that card? Or do I need to have it work with version 1.3 of the card? It's a complex set of dependencies because it becomes exponential really, really quickly. When you have, you know, 7 plus versions of 7 plus components, there's 50 dependencies to check right there. So it's a lot of challenge in the details and understanding of how those systems ultimately interconnect and work together.
Right. And as the system is now much more mature, we are wanting to transition to system level versioning. But the component level versioning, like I said, was just an effective way to get started quickly and just bootstrap it with a few teams working together.
I love the idea that the reason why this lives where it lives is because people in this space are used to working with these kind of tools. And they probably have a lot of things that are actually beneficial to the design system that aren't actually a part of the design system, like dependency graphs and like the understanding of, you know, how do I integrate snapshot testing or VRT? Any number of these things that tend to happen at that infrastructure level can benefit the design system, and the design system can sort of live in that ecosystem.
Right. And just the muscle to think about things like, where should our themes live and how should they get served up? Right. You can have different situations in different companies that would lead you to different decisions. But these sorts of engineers are the ones who can really dig into that question and figure out what makes the most sense for your specific company, right? You might reach a different decision if it's, you know, we have one brand, one theme and a dark mode versus if you have 10 brands versus if your product needs to have a, you know, a bring your own theme, white labeling sort of capability. Those have different impacts on how you should actually architect the system itself to make sure you have performance across the globe.
Awesome. Well, Brian, thank you so much for taking the time to share with us a really unique situation, and so cool to hear you talk about the way you think about serving your product ecosystem. So really appreciate you taking the time to be on and share.
Yeah, absolutely. Always fun.
Awesome. Well, hey, everybody, this has been the Design System Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Strahl. Have a great day, everyone. That's all for today. This has been another episode of the Design Systems Podcast. Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or a topic you'd like to know more about, find us on Twitter at the DS Pod. We'd love to hear from you with show ideas, recommendations, questions, or comments. As always, this pod is brought to you by Knapsack. You can check us out at knapsack.cloud. Have a great day.